Welcome to Parenting Teens with Dr. Cam, the podcast dedicated to helping you tackle the challenges of parenting teenagers without the drama. I'm your host, Dr. Cam. Let's get on with the show. As parents, there's nothing scarier than the thought of losing our child. But did you know that suicide is the leading cause of death for youth ages 10 to 24 in the United States? One of the biggest fears parents have is missing the warning signs. And the question we all want answered is, how can I tell if my teen is at risk? In today's episode, we're diving deep into the spotting teen suicide risk with Dr. Jessica Rabin, a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in pediatric psychology. She'll help us break down the common warning signs, dispel some myths, and give us the tools we need to have that crucial conversation with our teens. Whether you're worried about a specific behavior or just want to be proactive, this episode is for you. Hi, Jessica. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am too. This is such an important conversation to have. So give us a little backstory first. How did you start specializing in just teen mental health?
So actually, the reason I went into psychology and decided to pursue a PhD was because my cousin died by suicide. And so I was 18 at the time. He was 21. And I was a freshman in college. And thought I was going to go to pharmacy school. I was a chemistry major and I had that life experience. Still thought I was going to do pharmacy, but started volunteering for a suicide crisis line. And I realized maybe I don't want to do pharmacy and I want to do psychology. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do in psychology. Got my master's in clinical psychology, went on to my PhD, and I really thought I was going to do research. And all throughout my graduate program, I did research on suicide. And that's what I thought I was going to do. I was going to go into academia, do research. But if you're in a clinical psychology program, you have to do clinical work.
Right.
And my program was generalist training. So you had to see adults, kids. Nobody in my cohort wanted to do the kids rotation. And I was like, I'll do that. That's fine because I'm not going to do clinical work. Wow. And I started working with kids and teens. And I fell in love with it. And I don't do any research now. I did for a few years post-grad school. I especially with teens, like I work with younger kids as well, but I really love the teenage years because it's that middle ground of like, you're still a kid, but you're discovering who you are, your independence, and navigating like, I don't know, that time of life, which is, if you think of middle school, I don't know anybody that's like, I loved middle school. And then you transition
terrible, right?
into high school. And there's just so many unique challenges. And I feel like that's an age where I can really make an impact. Like they're still dependent on parents, obviously, but they have more autonomy to make their own decisions, learn skills, apply it. And yeah, I love working with teens. People always look at me like, really, teens? I'm like, I love it. And I learn so much.
Same thing, right? Yeah.
I learned so much from the teens.
It's amazing to me because I think so many adults completely, and we probably blank it out because the teen years are so traumatic. We have probably blocked out those years because we completely forget what it's like to be a teenager. Mm-hmm. And we can't relate to them. And the teen mind has not changed all that much. The world around them has, but the way they think and process information has not. And so I love, and that's, I knew I liked you because it's like the few of us that can still get into that mindset and understand and relate, love it because it's just, there's so much going on and the kids need someone. They need people that can understand them desperately. And it's, that's why I do this. I want to help other people and parents understand their kids.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think one of the challenging things, because we don't understand teens very well, and kind of tweens and teens, is we don't know how to discern between what is normal, typical, I'm doing air quotes, teen behavior, because it's very different from adult and child behavior, and what is concerning, we need to seek help, we need to worry about this behavior. How do we tell the difference?
Yeah. No, this is a big question I get from parents of my clients all the time, and they're like, well, they're more irritable, or they want to hang out with their friends more. And I'm like, that's pretty typical. If I'm making a broad, sweeping, general statement here, if it is an abrupt and distinct difference from their baseline, that's when I usually get, you know, concerned. It's not like, oh, I'm noticing that these individuals are trying to hang out with friends slightly more than they were previously, or like, oh, sometimes they get mad, but it's maybe like once a week. But if you're noticing like this distinct change in patterns of behavior, more irritable, angry, grades are a huge one. Like if you had a kid that was maybe an AB student and you're noticing now they don't want to go to school, they are failing, and that was never them. So if I'm making a broad general statement, like that abrupt change versus like those like small, like more seeking independence, we expect teens to kind of rely on their peers a little more. That's normal. Yeah. We expect teens and parents to have some conflict. That's normal. Maybe we notice sleep patterns change. That's normal. But if your teen is sleeping all the time or not sleeping at all, like, so kind of more of the extremes is where I start questioning.
And I want to be clear, this does not mean they're suicidal. This
means that,
right? I just want to be clear because I want parents to be like, oh my gosh, it's important. It means that something is going on and they need some sort of mental health support.
Correct.
Right. That's where we are. But that's not saying, okay, we're to this extreme, right?
Absolutely.
This is, and I think after COVID particularly, and you know, it's like, oh my gosh, it's been forever, it feels like, and then it feels like it was just yesterday. But the ongoing impact it's had on kids is tremendous because a lot of them missed really key years of development and learning how to socialize and learning how to cope. They missed it. So now they're years older and expected to be socially adept at this level and emotionally adept, and they're not. And we're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? How do we address that?
Oh, that is so hard because I hear that, especially, you know, my teens that are like in transitioning to adulthood age, well, they're almost 18. They should be able to do these things. But if they lost 3 years of that growth and development, we don't want to like baby them. But sometimes we need, there's a term in psychology I'm sure you're familiar with, scaffolding. So for anybody listening that may not be aware, like you may need to help your teen more than you think you would, given like maybe what you remember about being 16, 17, 18. But that doesn't mean doing things for them.
Right.
So, you know, social, like maybe you're helping them seek out clubs or activities that would, I don't know, has an interest of theirs. Maybe they're into video games and you found a local video gamers group, or they're into hiking and there's a local hiking group. You can suggest it, encourage them to go so they can meet other people. Or a big thing, I don't know if you run into this, is like life skills, like cooking. And maybe it's just because we were like isolated for so long and, you know, at home together, but, you know, invite them to cook with you. Okay. Then you can cook a meal, things like that. So there might have to be, I don't know, that scaffolding. Another thing, this isn't exactly what you asked, but going back to like us reflecting on being teens versus the world now, a lot of parents are very concerned that a lot of their teens spend so much time online and like their friends are online. For the world we live in, that is actually pretty typical. We still want in-person engagement. Absolutely. But like now, if your kid is online for 14, 16 hours a day, maybe. But
it's a lot.
If you know you're concerned, well, my child talks about their friends, but they're all online and I'm worried about their social skills. Let's dive deeper into that, because that might actually be very developmentally appropriate. Once again, maybe encourage, could you do these activities outside to meet people in real life. That's such an online term.
No, but I'm so glad that you said that, because this is something that I agree with completely. And I'm constantly working with parents to try to help them see that the world is different now. And that doesn't mean it's bad. Mm-hmm. It's just different. And we have so much fear. And when we take the phone away from our kids for emotional dysregulation and for everything else, we have to realize we're just taking away their social life. We're taking away their coping skills. Mm-hmm. We're taking away so much more than a device. And I think we need to realize that, that's a much bigger thing. So let's get into, because we want to really get into, how do we know if there's suicidal ideation? Mm-hmm. And let's go into the levels, because I hear kids say, I just want to die. Mm-hmm. This is so bad. Just shoot me. And things like mm-hmm. that. And parents go into a whirlwind panic when they hear that.
Yep.
And most of the time when I talk to kids, it is a statement of, right now life sucks. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I don't have a plan. So how do we distinguish between actual suicidal ideation and very dramatic language?
Yes. I love this question. And first, I want to validate to any parent listening, hearing your child make any comment like that is terrifying.
Terrifying.
Terrifying. So I completely understand if you hear your child say, like, I just want to die, or want to shoot myself, or I wish somebody would shoot me. Like, that is terrifying. And that is the launching pad for further questioning. So if we think about levels of suicidality, people usually say like passive versus active. Mm-hmm. I would argue, like, you know, thoughts of death, like passive thoughts of death, the example I always give is you're driving over a bridge and you're like, oh, what would happen if I just swerved right. the car off? Technically, that could be suicidal ideation. Most people are like, that was a weird thought. Move on. Never think of it again. That is very low level. When we think of passive suicidal ideation, so those are when you have thoughts of death, dying, maybe ending your life, but you have no plan, you have no means, you have no intent. Exactly what you were just saying, Dr. Cam, like, life sucks right now, and like, I wouldn't really care if I didn't wake up tomorrow, because I know what tomorrow's going to look like, and if it looks like today, it's not looking very good. And so that's when we get into the kind of further assessment. So we have these statements of, you know, oh, I wish I was dead, or like, life really sucks right now. I wouldn't care if I didn't wake up tomorrow. Okay, let's talk about that, because that is concerning. Well, do you have any thoughts of, you know, a plan of how you would do that? If a teen's like, oh God, no, like, it's just a thought. Like, have you seen the state of the world? Like, okay. So a plan. So that's them preparing to take action. Means, is there means, like, different ways that the individual may want to make an attempt, as well as intent. Do they actually plan on following through? When we start getting into, you know, oh, yep, I'm starting to think of a plan. Oh, I do have means accessible to me, or I have intent to act on it, whether it's like, I know when I'm going to do it, or I don't know when I'm going to do it, but if the opportunity arises, I plan on acting. That's when we get into those, that active. And right. that's when parents, guardians, clinicians should be more concerned and get into what we call safety planning in the mental health field. And we can get into that if you want, but I've been talking, so I want to make sure that was helpful.
No, that's perfect, because I think one of the things that I'm just like thinking of all this, and I'm every time I talk to somebody, I've got like all my clients and questions in my mm-hmm. head, you know. So there's people that they will ask, first of all, people that are afraid to ask those questions, mm-hmm. address that first.
Yep.
So address that. People that are afraid, if I bring it up, I'm going to plant the idea in their head that they should kill themselves, or I think they should.
So that is a myth. Like, mm-hmm. you're not going to suddenly, if you ask somebody, like, hey, are you thinking about killing yourself? They're not going to be suddenly like, oh, I didn't think about that, but now that you mention it. But I love that you brought that up, because parents are afraid to ask the question. What I always tell parents to do, like, one, you have to ask. Because if you don't ask, you don't know. And two, you have to be mindful of how you ask. You have to ask directly, and you also have to ask without judgment. saying something like, you know, you aren't thinking of killing yourself, are you? In like a judgmental tone, your kid is not going to open up to you. Like, even if they were, like, they would be like, oh, not with that attitude. So what I encourage parents to do, or anyone assessing for suicide, is, hey, I've noticed X, Y, and Z symptoms, and we can talk about those. Like, I've noticed you've been more withdrawn recently, or I've noticed you've been crying more, you've been more tearful. Sometimes when people are feeling the way that I've observed you feeling, they're having thoughts of wanting to end their life, or they're having thoughts of wanting to die. They're having thoughts of wanting to kill themselves. Whatever language feels most comfortable for you, are you thinking any of those things? Because it's curious. You're stating a reason why you're asking based on observed behaviors, and you're being very direct. You're not saying like, are you having any thoughts of maybe one day kind of hurting yourself? And it is scary. But if you can kind of practice a script that feels good for you and kind of have that in your back pocket, if the time arises when you're noticing, hey, my kid is like spending a lot of time in their room, they're not wanting to go to school, their grades are slipping, they're not really eating, I'm getting concerned. I know I just listed a lot of things. Bring it to them. Like, I'm worried about you. This is what I've observed. I'm wondering if you're having any thoughts of wanting to end your life.
I love that. And it is about the curiosity. And I think the other thing to be very wary of is the fear that you're going to be experiencing. Because if you're to the point where you want to ask your teen, then you're already have terrible thoughts in your head and fears. So having a deep breath and staying calm before you do that, because I think another piece of it is kids, and I want to get to the second question with this, because what I have here even more frequently now, because I think more and more parents realize we need to ask, is they will ask, their kids say no, and they don't believe them. So they keep asking and keep asking and keep asking. And help us understand, how do we, if our kids say no, how do we know they're telling the truth?
And it's hard. And I would say it also depends on the relationship. I would hope that if you have a good relationship with your child to the point you feel comfortable asking them these things and they say no, that you can trust them. What I always encourage parents to do is follow up on that. Okay, I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so thankful to hear that. I am still really worried about you. If you feel like you were to have those thoughts, or you start feeling like you do want to be dead or end your life, do you feel comfortable coming to me and talking to me about it? Or, and they might say no, and that can be hard as a parent. Or you might ask, you know, if they say no, or you might want to word it a different way, you know, who are people that you would feel comfortable going to? Because a lot of times teens may tell their friends before the parents. I will say I've worked with so many amazing teens over the years, and teens get just as worried about their teen friends, and a lot of times we'll reach out to the parents. And so trust your teen. Like, if they're like, I don't know how I would feel coming to you. Okay. Is there anyone else? Is it an aunt, a teacher, a coach, a friend? Just get them to identify people so that you don't feel like you have to keep asking and asking and asking. Because the more you ask, I'm not saying never ask again, and we can get into the nuance of that. But if you're like, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? Your teen's not going to want to talk to you.
Hey parents, feeling overwhelmed? You don't have to do this alone. Join the Thriving Parent Academy, where community support is everything. Member Tracy said, we all developed at an exponential rate together. And Carrie admitted, I didn't think I needed this, but it's a life game changer. Don't wait. Join us at thrivingparent.org and use promo code THRIVE20 for 20% off your membership. Let's thrive together. No. Not at all. And I think what happens too, and what I've seen, is when parents worry so much and keep asking, they send the message that I think you're really broken. And I think something's wrong with you. And the kid is like, I'm just being me. You think I'm broken, so I'm broken. And then they just get this sense of hopelessness. Like, there's nothing I can do to stop you from worrying about me. And now And I've actually, and I wanted to bring this up too, because I've actually several cases like this, not just one, several cases. And I understand the mindset of a parent who sees these signs in their kids, sees some warning signs, you know, these kind of big changes, grades are dropping, they're always sleeping, they're down all the time, they're not hanging out with friends. I mean, big signs. Mm-hmm. They've asked their child, are you thinking about this? A child says no. They don't believe them, and they just will not let them ever alone. They follow them from room to room to room and never let them alone. And the kids tell me, the only thing that makes me think about hurting myself is because my parents won't leave me alone. And even though the parents know this, they can't stop. How do you help these people? How do you help these parents? Because I get the fear. I get it so much.
Yeah, I get the fear too. Like I said before we even really started the conversation, like hearing your child or seeing these signs, even if they're saying no, is so hard. Like as a parent, we don't want to lose our children. One, I would think about what is my behavior communicating to my teen? I know you said, you know, that they feel like the only thing that is causing them to feel this way is the parent following them around. I would say it also communicates, I don't trust you. And if it communicates, I don't trust you, then you're actually in reality pushing your teen away to not tell you if they were feeling suicidal. And so, you know, kind of reflect on what are my behaviors communicating? Is there a way that I can address my own anxiety while still keeping my child safe that's not to this extent? So I encourage like anyone, even if you don't have a suicidal teen, to keep your house as safe as possible. You know, make sure any firearms are locked up. Medication is away in a cabinet, because you just don't know. Like, even you could have a little kid that accidentally gets like in it.
Well, so even a teen might be experimenting and not know. Right?
Exactly. So are there ways that you can just kind of safety proof your house to reduce access to means if you are concerned? Could you kind of find ways to compromise? Following around your teen is not a good way. So could it be, you know, I'm going to let them, you know, do their thing, but if I haven't seen or heard from them in X amount of time, maybe a couple hours, I'll just, you know, go knock on their bedroom door, check in, see how they're feeling. Also gauge their symptoms. Like, are you doing this behavior every single day, no matter how they're acting?
Yes.
Because that's going to push them away versus, you know, they got up today, they're chatty, they're themselves. Today's going to be a day I can relax. They seem to be doing okay. Maybe I'll just check in. Hey, how are you feeling today? Good. Oh, you're going to go hang out with friends after school? Awesome. Just let me know where you are. I have Life 360 on, whatever it is. Yeah. And then maybe save that more, I don't want to say controlling behavior, because it's not controlling. It's out of love and fear. But the more attentive behavior for the days you're like, ugh, my kid is spending a lot more time in the room. Maybe encourage them like, hey, I've noticed you've been feeling down. Hey, okay, let's sit and watch a movie together. So you're not just following them around. You're actively doing something with your teen where you have your eyes on them, but it's not like following them around their house and removing the door and things like that.
Oh, yeah. I think what's really hard is that we want our kids to trust us, but our kids won't trust us if we don't trust them.
Correct.
Just end of story. And so we are not willing to give our kids trust because we're afraid that if we do and something happens, then we weren't on the ball, right? That that we missed something. So for us to trust our kids means laxing on our job, I think.
Yeah.
And that's, so how do we separate the two of trusting our kids, but also feeling like we are being vigilant enough as parents that if something happens, we're not going to feel like complete, well, we're going to feel like complete failure no matter what. If something happens.
I was about to say if something happens. Yeah. So I think it goes back to that conversation that I talked about a few minutes ago with like asking the question, okay, if they say no, then follow up. Okay. You know, who are people you could talk to if they've identified people, or, you know, who are resources? Maybe they're already in therapy. Is this something you could talk about? Maybe having the discussion of, you know, I, you might not be suicidal. I still have noticed these things. Do you think it would be beneficial to talk to a professional? You know, so getting those resources, safety, planning your house. You know, I tell parents all the time, they can do a safety plan like we do. So, you know, what are things that you're still enjoying in life? What are some reasons for living? Encourage them to do activities. Because by doing all of those things, you're still taking care of your child. You're still ensuring their safety. And you're also showing that you trust them. Like, okay, you identified, you could reach out to me, Aunt Susie, and your best friend, Jake. Great. So these are three people that I know you feel comfortable with. And it's also maybe having a conversation of like, thank you for allowing me to have this conversation. Are you okay if I check in with you when I'm noticing something's off? Or is it okay if I check in with you once a week? And I should have said this earlier, when you have this conversation, make sure it's a time that both of you are calm and not distracted.
Yes.
Because
that's very important. That's huge.
Yeah. And I mean, it could even just be like a weekly check-in, and like asking for consent on these things and trusting your teen to like also follow through is that mutual trust and respect. You know, and obviously if there's any shift in behavior, like, okay, they said they were fine and now it's 5 days later and I'm noticing like these other behaviors, check in again. Like, hey, I know 5 days ago you said you were fine. I'm noticing this, and as your parent, I'm worried and I just need to check in because I love you and I care about you. But you don't have to do this alone. There's school counselors, there's therapists, and I recognize mental health care is not accessible to everyone in our country. Like, I'm fully aware of that. You know, support groups, things like that. So if you're utilizing these resources, things like that, you're still doing enough. You don't have to follow them around all the time to feel like you're doing enough. If you are partnered, talk to your partner about it. What can we do as parents? You know, maybe encourage, like, let's do every Friday. Most teens might hate this. Maybe a Wednesday. I don't know. Like, let's do a family, like, movie night or something where you're still doing things together that is not about you following them around because you're so anxious. Right.
It is. It's such a hard thing. So let's go into, we ask them, do you have a plan? And they say, yes.
Yes.
Now what do we do?
Yeah. So first,
once
I'm
we breathe again, what do we do?
I was going to say, I validate that. That's terrifying. So if they say, yes, I have a plan, one, I would thank them for telling you. Yeah. First and foremost, I would say, thank you so much for telling me. And then I can only speak for the United States. Obviously, I would ask them what that plan is. And really, unfortunately, I feel like this is an area our system is broken. If you have a mobile crisis unit in the area, you can look up local mobile crisis. And they usually, it's like literally like a van can come out to your house, do an assessment. Not all areas have them, but that would be my first step because it's less intense than going to the ER, going to the emergency department to get a psychiatric evaluation.
So traumatic for these kids.
I know.
Which is, I know a lot of kids that have done that, and that's been more traumatic than anything. It's a hard situation.
988 suicide crisis line. There are some other crisis lines as well, like Call Black Line for Black teens, the Trevor Project for LGBTQIA teens. So that's an option as well. Obviously, from like a home environment standpoint, if they admit to you the means, make sure they do not have access to the means. Stay with them.
Yes. That's the time that you do follow them around.
Yes, that is the time you do follow them around. Stay with them. They might not want to talk about their suicidal ideation, and that is okay. Do not pressure them to do it. Like, okay, you know, you said you had this plan. Maybe you can call 988, or, you know, I'm going to call your second parent, have them come while we're waiting. What do you want to talk about? Do you want to watch a movie? Do you want to listen to music? Try to like encourage those coping skills. If they have a therapist, maybe you can call the therapist at that point, but stay with them, remove them from the means. A lot of times, and I know I said the ER because I was like jumping, like if it's an actual crisis, like mobile crisis or the ER.
Yeah.
there is evidence to show that suicidal crises actually last a very short period of time. So it is possible that if they agree to call 988 or you sit with them, you just talk to them, hey, what's, if they want to talk about what's been going on to make you feel this way, you know, all those things. By the time the conversation ends, they might say, I'm not feeling suicidal anymore. I will say, as a parent, you still, that's still the time you want to keep the eye on them. So even if they're not actively suicidal, you say like, hey, tonight, I want you to sleep in our room, or do you mind if I sleep in here? Or, you know, I know you're not feeling actively suicidal anymore, but let's call your therapist to get an ASAP appointment and see what they can do for you. It's hard to stay calm, but the more that you can stay calm and just remind them, and this is the thing, now that those words came out of my mouth, remind them that you love them. Never say to a teen, well, think about all of us if you were to die.
Yeah.
Because that, when people get to the point that they are truly considering suicide, they truly believe that everybody around them would be better off without them here.
Correct.
And so saying like, well, think about me and think about your sister and think about your grandparents and how much they'll miss you. That's not going to be helpful. Let them lead the conversation. If they don't want to talk, talk to them about whatever random stuff you want to talk about, to know that they are safe. You are there. You are listening to them. Like I said, it might pass. If it doesn't pass, 988 or other suicide hotline, calling their therapist if you have one, and or psychiatrist, mobile crisis, and unfortunately ER, because to my knowledge, and you can tell me if it's different in your area, at least in my area, we don't have a place that like you can walk in for a suicidal crisis.
There's nothing. That's useful. I think too, I want to really point out too, because just kind of reiterate this conversation with your teen, if this is happening, we're staying as calm as possible because we're now in crisis management. We are not trying to guilt or shame them out of it because the reason they're in there is they already are carrying way too much guilt and shame that they don't know an out. So piling more in is not going to help. What they need more than anything is to be heard. To be validated, even if it's this big, to be validated and feeling that big, and then letting them know how much they matter to you. End of story. Like you're, it's not about you, it's about them and them only. And I think that I just really want to reiterate, because I do think we go in panic mode and we start trying to convince them, and that's not the place they're at.
And no, I love that you kind of just summarized that, because I also always want to tell parents or anybody that a teen comes to and says this, like, typically, if they are saying to you, like, yes, I want to kill myself, I have a plan, the fact that they're reaching out to you, one, shows that they trust you, and two, that they feel like you are a safe person that can help them through this. Because maybe, even though that's what their brain is telling them right now, there's a part of them that doesn't want to die. And they're willing to have this discussion with you. So if you can remind, like, my teen is telling me this because they trust me, I'm a safe person, and I need to show up as that trusted, safe person. Whether it's hugging them, you know, and it's okay to, like, if they're crying, it's okay to cry with them. And be like, I'm scared too. We're going to get through this together. You know, thank you for telling me all of those things. But listen, validate, follow their lead. Like I said, if they want to talk about what's going on, talk about it. If they're like, really, I want to talk about that funny movie that I saw in theaters, great. Talk about that. Whatever they need. And you can ask that. What can I do for you right now? What do you need right now? How can I show up for you right now? Because like you so beautifully said, Dr. Cam, it's not about what you need, even though that's terrifying. And once the crisis is over, get your own support. Absolutely. Decompress, cry, scream, whatever you need. But in that moment, it's about your child and keeping your child safe. And that is the ultimate goal.
That is a perfect way to end. That is so important. How do people find you?
Oh, absolutely. So I am on social media. My handle is at Jessica Lee. Lee is L-E-I-G-H, PhD, Instagram, TikTok. I also have two podcasts of my own. So my solo podcast is Psych Talk on all major platforms. And then I have a podcast that I co-host with three of my friends. We're all mental health professionals, called Welcome to Group Therapy. But if you find me on Instagram, I have linked all in my bio to all of it. So
perfect. And we'll have all the links in the show notes and everything. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is such an important conversation, and thank you for willing to have this discussion.
Absolutely. And that's a wrap. Thank you, parents, for taking time out of your busy day to listen in. I appreciate you. If you found the episode enlightening, please like, review, and share with a friend navigating the teen years. Until next time, stay curious. Remember, there's always more to the story than what you see.